Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to today's program at the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Dr. David K. Okola, and I'm the chairperson for the Personal Growth Forum and your moderator for today's event. We also welcome our radio listeners, and we invite our audiences to visit us at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure and honor to introduce our distinguished speaker. Hal Elrod is known as America's Empowerment Coach, and he's considered by many leaders to have already overcome and accomplished more at the age of 30 than most people do in a lifetime. An entertainer since hosting his first radio show at age 15 as Yo Pal Al, and an all-time record-breaking sales rep for a $200 million marketing company at only 19. Hal's real triumph came in the face of tragedy at 20 when he was struck head-on by a drunk driver and found dead at the scene. After 6 days in a coma, Hal woke to face the unimaginable reality that he had 13 broken bones, suffered permanent brain damage, and that he may never walk again. Defying the logic of doctors, the challenges of brain damage, and the temptations to be a victim, Hal made the choice to take 100% responsibility for his life and his future. He went on to become a number one national champion sales manager at age 24, and he was one of the youngest members ever introduced into the company's Hall of Fame at 25. He became one of the world's top life and business success coaches at just 26. Hal is the best-selling author of the book, Taking Life Head On, The Hal Elrod Story. And he now inspires audiences all over the world as an international award-winning keynote and youth speaker. This past fall, Hal stretched beyond his comfort zone when he ran an ultra marathon of 52 consecutive miles to raise money for charity. Hal's been interviewed on dozens of radio and television talk shows across the country. Last year, Hal's story was featured in the newest book in the best-selling Chicken Soup of the Soul series, and he says to watch out for him to be on Oprah later this year. Hal is now living the life of his dreams in Sacramento with his beautiful fiancée, Ursula, and their chihuahua, Rupert. And he's here today to share his unbelievable story with you and to talk to you about living your life's purpose. Please help me welcome Yo Pal Hal.
David, thank you for the kind introduction. My mom will be excited to hear you read it just like she wrote it. I'll have to send her an email. Although I think you got an outdated version of the introduction, because if I heard right, it said to watch out for Hal to be on Oprah later this year. And I've actually already been on Oprah a couple of times, so she must have sent an outdated version. In fact, I have some pictures with me if you guys want to see them when I was on the Oprah show. Do you guys want to see the pictures? Okay, cool. This is my first time on Oprah, and you'll see I'm with my best friend Jeremy in this picture. And I was telling her something that I was very excited to share with her. The second time I was on Oprah, you see, that's my fiance Ursula, who's in the back, and we were sharing a moment with Oprah. Now, I love to dance. I don't know, by a show of hands, who loves to dance in this room? Who likes to dance? We got a few dancers. So my favorite dancing talk show host, can you guys guess who it is? It's Ellen DeGeneres. So I had to get on Ellen. So there's me busting a move with Ellen. Now, I will tell everybody, when you start to get on these nationally syndicated talk shows, you have to be careful not to let it go to your head. You can start to get a big head, a little bit full of yourself. And that really came across in my interview with Larry King, as you can see. Now, as you can tell, these are jokes, and I have not yet been on these shows. I've been on a couple local programs. But the point is, these are some goals of mine, some dreams of mine. And speaking of dreams, I want to talk with you today about the ABCs of living life's purpose. And the way that I define life's purpose, I think everybody would have a different definition. If I asked each of you, what do you see as life's purpose? We'd probably all have a different definition. The definition for the purpose of today's message is as you see there. It is to loving the life that you have while creating the life of your dreams. You know, there are a lot of personal development gurus that will really preach one way or the other, right? Loving the life that you have. There's a lot of self-help gurus that say, don't worry about the future. You've got to be present. It's all about the power of now. You heard that before? But then you have other self-help gurus that say, don't worry about the problems you've got now. Don't worry about how your life is now. See it how you want it to be. And focus on the future and creating the life that you want. Right? Have you heard that as well? So who do we listen to? Right? Who's right? And my experience has taught me that life, it's a dual purpose. It's two sides of the same coin. That we've got to love the life that we have now, unconditionally, unequivocally, without judgment. And we've got to be willing to take the actions to create the life that we really want, the life of our dreams, to improve it. So if you guys are with me, say, I'm with you, Hal. Okay. Speaking of dreams, how many of you, by a show of hands, when you were a kid, you had a dream of what you wanted to be when you grew up? Anybody? A few of you? My dream was to be a radio disc jockey. I wanted to be a nationally syndicated radio disc jockey, like Howard Stern. Or for you older folks, think Casey Kasem, or maybe Abbott and Costello, depending on how old you are. But the point was, my dream was to be on the radio. And when I was 15, I got a phone call from the local radio station manager. And the manager of the local radio station heard that I had been DJing dances around town. In fact, if you look at this picture, that's the first school dance that I ever DJed, and that's my seventh grade sister, who doesn't look very happy in that picture, but I was DJing her dance. So the local radio station manager got word that I wanted to be a DJ, and he called and offered me a position DJing on the radio at 15. Now, this was a goal that I thought, like, after college I would get, but I got the opportunity at 15. So I was excited, but a couple days before my first day on air, I'm driving around town with my mom, and I'm nervous, and she can tell I'm nervous and I'm fidgeting, and she says, what's wrong? I said, Mom, I don't have a cool DJ name picked out yet, right? Don't DJs have, like, cool, hip, fun names? I said, I don't have a cool name picked out. She said, well, I can help you. Okay, let's hear your idea of a cool DJ name. My mom says, how about rhyme it with Hal? Be like my pal Hal or your pal Hal, or why don't you use slang and make it cool and hip? Make it yo pal Hal. I said, Mom, you're such a dork. I'm never going to be yo pal Hal. And you'll notice if you look at my logo that it stuck. Mom got her way. And actually, if you look at the top of my book there, again, you'll notice yo pal Hal. So there's two lessons in this story. Number one, Mom is always right. Yes or yes? We can all agree on that. But the second lesson is to always be open-minded, to always be open to the perspective of others, because you never know when it could change your life. It could enhance your life. So I encourage everybody to be aware of what I call the four most dangerous words. You guys want to know what the four most dangerous words are? The four most dangerous, that I'm not going to tell you unless I feel that you really want to know. Do you guys want to know what the four most dangerous words are? Okay. The four most dangerous words, I believe, four of the most dangerous words in the English language are, I already know that. I already know that. I know that when I can be in a situation where I'm listening to a speaker or any sort of learning situation, those words pop up a lot, right? When you hear something and you think, oh, I already know this, or I've already heard this before. And they're dangerous because what happens is when you say those words, whether it's to someone else or just in your own head, your brain literally, it shuts off, and you close yourself off from any opportunity to grow and to learn and to really maximize the value of the experience at hand. I know that's something that held me back a lot in the past, was listening to those words. And so now, when I hear myself say, oh, I already know this, I've already heard this before, I actually use that as a green light to really focus and pay attention. And a better question might be, am I living that? Instead of I already know that, am I living that? Because you probably agree, most of you, that it's not so much about knowing what to do or learning new things as it is about getting yourself to do the things that you need to do, right? It's like everybody wants to be healthier and happier and better shape. Well, if you want to be healthier or in better shape, right, we know what to do. You eat right and you exercise. So it's not a matter of always knowing what to do. It's just doing what you know, doing what you know. Now, before I jump in and start today, and I'm going to share with you my story. It's a story of a extraordinary tragedy that really led to the triumph that is my life right now. And my objective today is simply to inspire you with my story and to empower you with some real actionable strategies and concepts, a real simple formula that I call the ABCs of life's purpose that will hopefully add some value to your life, enhance your life in some way. And the only rule that I have for today, I only have one rule, and it applies to you as much as it applies to me, and that is simply this, that we give up the need to be perfect for the opportunity to be authentic. Give up the need to be perfect for the opportunity to be authentic. And I can promise you that I will not be perfect up here, but I will be authentic. You have my word. I will be authentic. So I went on to pursue DJing, and after college, living my dream at age 18, I was on a bigger radio station, and I was living the dream. A week after I started on the radio, a friend of mine from school took me into his work, and he had a job selling Cutco cutlery. How many of you have heard of Cutco kitchen knives before? By show of hands, anybody? No? Just a couple Cutco owners? Cutco is the world's finest cutlery, and it is sold to consumers directly in their home, one-on-one appointments, and one of the most difficult ways of selling, if you ask me. And my friend said, you should sell Cutco, Hal. I could get you a job. I thought, I'm a DJ. I'm Yo Pal Hal. I'm not a salesman. Never in my life. And one day I went into the office with him, and he had to get some rope and leather and order forms and some supplies. And I go into the office with him, and I meet his manager. And his manager is really cool, this guy named Jesse. And Jesse is really charismatic. He seems really genuine. And my friend introduces us and says that I should get a job there. So the manager, this guy Jesse, says, Hal, why don't you start training this weekend? I'll hire you since you get a good recommendation from your friend here, Teddy. He says, I'll hire you. I said, I can't. I'm DJing midnight to 6 a.m. I'm the new guy. I got the grunt shift. I can't possibly go to training on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 9 to 5 because I'm DJing all night long. Now, Jesse, being the good salesman that he was, right, he had other thoughts, other plans. And he somehow convinced me that I should forego my sleep and that I should try this thing, this Cutco, and go to training. And so I actually went and I started training, and I really didn't know what to expect. I really didn't know what to expect. I'll almost say I was coerced into going by my friend. But I went into Cutco, and on the second day of training, I made a decision. You know, Anthony Robbins, one of my mentors, says that it's in our moments of decision that our destiny is shaped. And on day two of training, I made a decision. I said, I'm going to commit to this Cutco thing. I've never committed to anything in my life. I never really committed to school, never really got good grades, was never really exceptional or excelled at anything, never played sports, was never really above average my whole life. And something in training, something I saw in my manager, in Jesse, inspired me to want to be a better person. And I thought, there's no time better than now to give this everything that I've got. And we learned about something called the Fast Start Record. And the Fast Start was simply your first 10 days selling Cutco. Your first 10 days selling Cutco, there was all sorts of contests and prizes to incentivize you to get off to a fast start, work hard. And he told us, Jesse said, there's a Fast Start Record. The most anyone's ever sold in the 50 years this company's been around is $12,000. And after day two of training, I went up to Jesse. I said, what do you think it would take for me to break that record? I didn't even know what I was talking about. I didn't really know what I was talking about. I didn't know what I was asking, but I was inspired. And Jesse said, it'll take more work than you could ever imagine. You're going to have to face more rejection than you've probably ever faced in your life. You're going to have to deal with more ups and downs. You know, he wasn't making this sound very appealing to try to do. But he said, but if you want to do it, it's possible, and I'll show you the way. I'll show you how to do it. But you have to be willing to put forth the effort, overcome the challenges, the adversity, the when people say no to you or don't buy or reject you. You have to be willing to overcome the challenges. See, isn't it easy in life you know, to look at a prize or a goal, something that we want in life, and think, I'm going to get that. And it's easy when you're in the vision, you know, envisioning stage or the goal setting stage, but as soon as adversity shows up, right? Rejection, you know, those painful experiences, often we throw in the towel. Anybody ever thrown in the towel before? So I said, I'm willing to commit. And I went out that first day. I had 10 days. I had to sell $12,000, which if you break down the numbers, it's $1,200 a day. And my first day, I went out. I saw the best people I could imagine that I knew to sell this Cutco knives to. And I went 0 for 3. I had 3 appointments. I made no sales. So I faced my first adversity real quick. Not the start I was expecting to get. I left the Cutco office after the third day of training on top of the world. And that next day I was on the bottom. And I called Jesse. I said, what should I do? You know, maybe I'm not cut out for this. He said, Hal, there's 2 ways you can respond to this. You can do what most people would do, which is throw in the towel and give up, because it's no fun to get rejected and not achieve your goals. And I said, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of doing. What's option 2? He said, Hal, or you could do what the only logical thing, if you really want to improve your life and improve your condition, he said, you can go and make more phone calls, set more appointments. I knew he was right. And so I went out, I made the calls, and the next day I sold $2,000 plus. And the next 10 days I sold a total of $15,000, and I broke the Fast Start record. You can see this is... And from then on, for the next year and a half, I was one of the top salespeople in Cutco. And I don't take the credit. I think I was blessed to have a good mentor. I was blessed to put myself in a situation where I had good influence in my life. As, by the way, I acknowledge all of you for being here, because you're all doing that as part of the Commonwealth Club, right? You're putting yourself in situations and exposing yourself to influence that's positive. Well, a year and a half after I was selling Cutco, I had broken this record, and they put me up on stage to give a speech. I was really nervous. Anybody ever spoken in public before? It can be a really nerve-wracking experience. I was very nervous. But I went up there, and I actually got a standing ovation afterwards. Never have I felt so elated in my life. And I got in my car to drive home. I was in Modesto, California, giving this speech, and I had to go home to Fresno, California. And what ended up happening... At 11:32 p.m., feeling on top of the world, the last thing I remember was looking at my cell phone and thinking I wanted to call my mom and dad to tell them how great the night was, but that it was too late and I should wait till morning. At 11:32 p.m., a drunk driver got on the freeway going the opposite direction from me. And without warning, I don't remember seeing the headlights, I can't recall what the experience was like, but I was hit head-on by the drunk driver at 70 miles an hour. And at age 20, I went from being on top of the world to really my world ending. You can see this is the front driver's side of the car. I was found dead at the scene. What happened is when they pulled me out of the car, it took the jaws of life 50 minutes to cut the top off of the car and to pull me out. And when they did, I lost so much blood that my heart actually stopped beating. And I was clinically dead for roughly 5 to 6 minutes. And if you look, that's a view from the top and the front. So I was sitting over here. And what happened was, after I got hit head-on at 70 miles an hour, my car spun around, and the car behind me hit me in the door at 70 miles an hour. So most of my injuries came actually from the side impact. And that's a view from the top. There's where I was sitting right there. And you can see how the car came over. It actually broke my femur in half. My pelvis was broken in 3 places between the center console. I fractured my humerus. In my arm, I broke my elbow, I severed my radial nerve in my arm, my ear was almost completely severed, and then the ceiling buckled and it cut the top of my head open. And again, I actually bled to death. Well, I was revived, I was taken to the hospital, Modesto Memorial Hospital, and that's me with 13 broken bones, a lot of internal injuries, internal bleeding, ruptured spleen, and the diagnosis from the doctors that they'd given my mom and dad was grim, to say the least. It was that we don't know how long he'll be in a coma, probably 6 months to a year is what they estimated. They said, and we don't know if he'll ever walk again. based on the compound fracture to his femur and the injuries to his pelvis, he may not be able to ever put support or support on it, walk on his legs. I was also diagnosed with permanent brain damage. I had severe frontal lobe damage, which affects my inhibitions and my short-term memory. So as a motivational speaker, one of two things can happen. Either I say something totally uninhibited and inappropriate and potentially offend some of you, so I apologize in advance if that happens, or I totally forget where I was at and what I was talking about, and that can happen too. So as I mentioned, I'll be authentic with you today, not necessarily perfect. But I was diagnosed with permanent brain damage. This picture I have in here, this is my favorite picture, I think, of all my time in the hospital. It's my dad. You'll notice the bunny ears. I say, Dad always had faith. But I came out of the coma after 6 days. And you can imagine what it would be like. I don't even remember exactly waking up from the coma. I've had it told to me how I responded and what my experience was. But I would imagine it's something like, you know, coming out of a fog, really, really hazy and not really clear. I didn't know how I'd gotten there. I didn't know what had really happened to me. And all I knew is that I was in pain and I couldn't move and I was in a hospital. I had a lot of visitors. This is my Uncle Mike and my Aunt Wendy. I've given the thumbs up. You can see I was optimistic. Here's a picture with my Nana and Papa, giving Nana a kiss on her hand. And the one thing that I can tell you that I was I was positive. One thing that I realized was that I couldn't change what had happened to me. In life, there are many things that are out of our control. In fact, probably most things. And I'm sure we've all found that it's a losing battle when we try to, you know, will reality to change. When we wish or want that things were different than that possibly cannot be different. And for me, I decided to focus on the process. I thought, I can't change what's happened to me. The only thing that I can do is I can make the most with what I have right now. And in life, there's so many situations that we face that we can't change. We can't change the people around us. We can't change anything in the past that's happened till this point. So many things outside of our control. We can't change the speed of traffic on the way here, right? The only choice that we have is how we experience life, how we choose to respond to the situations in our life. And so I decided the only thing that made sense was for me to focus on responding in a positive way. And the doctors, they didn't buy it. They actually called my mom and dad in one day, and they sat them down, and they said, "We're very concerned about Hal. We believe he's in denial. We've seen this with accident victims. It's very common. See, when we hang out with Hal, when we spend time with Hal or assess where he's at, in therapy, his therapist report, he's always happy. He's always smiling and laughing and joking, and that's not normal for someone that's been through what he's been through. What's normal is for him to be depressed, to be angry maybe with the drunk driver, to be sad. And we want you to talk to him and find out how he's really feeling. Because this common response of denial where it's so painful, and maybe some of you have had an experience in your life that was so painful you didn't want it to be real, you could not accept it. So they wanted my mom and dad to come talk to me to get to the bottom of things and find out how I was really feeling. And so my dad came in one day, and I was sitting in my hospital bed. I didn't know when I was going to walk again. The doctors had given me a positive prognosis that I could probably walk in 6 months to a year. So it was looking good. My dad came in, and he sat down, and he got real serious. He said, "Hal, how are you doing?" I'm not a real serious guy, so it kind of weirds me out when my dad gets all serious. You know, I'm like, "Fine, Dad, why? What's up?" He said, "I know that when you have visitors and you have friends and you're interacting with other people, you're able to joke and laugh and have fun, but when you're by yourself, when it's late at night, when you're falling asleep and you're thinking about what's happened to you and what condition you're in and what the future looks like," he said, "how are you feeling? Are you sad? Are you angry? Are you depressed? These things are normal." I was kind of taken aback. I paused and I thought about my response. I said, "Dad, I thought you knew me better than that. I'm great. I'm alive. What would I be sad or depressed or angry about?" I said, Dad, there's something that I learned in my Cutco training that guides me through every day of my life and every challenge that I have. I said, it's called the 5-minute rule. My manager, Jesse, taught us in training that things aren't always going to go your way. There are things that are going to be out of your control. And it's okay to be negative sometimes, to vent or to release. But Jesse said, not for more than 5 minutes. There's just no point. Curse, moan, you know, whatever you got to do to release, maybe tell somebody, right? But after those 5 minutes are up, the rule states that you simply focus 100% of your time, energy, and attention and efforts into what you can control, into what is within your control, into the actions that you can take. And for me, that was my decision. I said, Dad, it's been a lot more than 5 minutes. It's been like 2 weeks. I said, what if me feeling bad about my circumstances or feeling depressed or like a victim, why me? This isn't fair. Why did this happen? I said, I had those thoughts. But for 5 minutes, you know, and I quickly realized that it only makes sense for me to be happy. You know, we all have difficulties in our life. We all face adversity. And as I mentioned, most of it is outside of our control. And the only choice that we have is how we experience each moment of our lives. And in life, I always say that there are two pages that you can focus on. One page lists everything that you have to feel bad about, everything you have to be upset about, all of your dysfunctions and all of your faults and all of the injustices in the world and in your life and in your family and people that treat you mean. It's all listed on this page. And on the other page is everything that you have to feel grateful for. The fact that you're alive, that you have your intelligence, that you have common things that we often take for granted, like a roof over your head and food in your stomach, and you have loved ones and you have, you know, friends. There's this list. Both lists are long. For all of us. Both lists are really long for all of us. But see, negative people always say, I'm not negative, I'm just realistic. You ever heard that? Or said that? My question for you is this. How is it more realistic to focus on the negative page and think about the negative page and read the negative page to all your friends and family and loved ones and coworkers, right? How is that more realistic than somebody that chooses to focus on the positive page? Instead of talking about and complaining about what's wrong in their life and what's wrong in the world, they spend most of their time talking about what they're grateful for and what's right in the world. I think that's just as much realistic, don't you guys? We're going to take a quick break. David, I know you have a quick announcement to make.
Yes.
Yes, I do. We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Hal Elrod giving his or her workshop and talk on the ABCs and how the ABCs of living your life's purpose with Hal Elrod. Thank you.
Thanks, David. So I said, Dad, you go back and tell those doctors I'm not in denial. I'm genuinely happy. Not because this is what I wanted, but because there's no other choice, logical choice for me than for me to accept it and make the best of it. And so I committed to my process. I knew that the only, you know, I couldn't change what had happened to me. I could only focus on getting better. And the less complaining I did and the more action I took, right? The more action I took, the faster I could get better. And so I committed to the process. There's me in therapy trying to learn how to use my limbs again. You'll notice that left hand's a little limp. I mentioned I severed the radial nerve. My left hand, for about 6 months, I couldn't lift it up. This was the extent of the motion that I had. Couldn't lift my wrist. And you could imagine my guy friends always teasing me, you know, hey, Hal, what's up? It's like, come on, kick a guy when he's down. I can't do anything about it, right? It was funny. I would also go out with my manager, Jesse, came and visited me a lot. We became great friends selling Cutco. And Jesse would come visit me, and he would wheel me out to the basketball court that they had at the hospital in my wheelchair. And he would help me up, and I would, you know, I could get to where I could stand there, and he would kind of help support me. And then he would hand me the basketball. And the funny thing was, because I didn't have a lot of use of this hand, I would hold the basketball in this hand, and then before I would shoot, to get this hand on the ball, I would have to flop it up and time it right to catch it on the ball, and then I would shoot. And anyway, needless to say, it wasn't the best highlights of my basketball career. This is me in therapy. Again, learning how to use my limbs, learning how to use how to use my arms again, how to function. How to use my body again. And, you know, I had accepted that I couldn't walk for 6 months. You could probably imagine that's a pretty tough thing to accept. Of all the things that we get frustrated about in our day-to-day lives, right, that's a biggie, right? But I had accepted it. And 3 weeks after the night of the accident, I was taken up to take some routine x-rays in my wheelchair. They brought me back, got in bed. The next morning, the doctors came in, and they said, "We've got some pretty amazing news. Hal's body is healing at a miraculous rate. And we're actually going to let him try and walk tomorrow." It's like, you know, talk about the best news I ever heard at you 3 weeks later. And by the way, the power of positive thinking. I can't prove it scientifically, but did that have something to do with it? I don't know. You know, but I can tell you that thinking positively and choosing to be happy and stuff was a lot better way to get to the walking, whether it took 6 months or 3 months. But 3 months later, I did take my first step, and it was a painful step. Isn't the first step always the toughest one to take, though? Right? It's always the most painful, just to get yourself to even take it, right? As they rolled me up in my wheelchair, mentally it was painful. It's usually more painful mentally than anything else. Once we actually take that first step or that first action, aren't we glad we did? And then it creates a little momentum, and then it's easier to keep taking steps. Kind of like if you want to get in the gym, you know, that New Year's resolution. It's tough to get yourself to go to the gym, but once you're there, it's kind of fun to work out, right? In fact, I have this little strategy that I use. It's the first step strategy, which is simply this, that if you take the first step, that the rest are easy. I mean, that's basically the strategy, but I'll give you an analogy. If you want to get in shape, raise your hand. How many of you want to get healthier and get in better physical shape by show of hands? Okay, most of you. Now, and I won't ask you to put your hands up if you're not taking the actions that you need to be taking. We'll keep that to ourselves. But here's the point. Most of us, in our heads, that first step is difficult. We think ourselves out of going to the gym or out of taking that walk or out of exercising, right? Let me ask you a question. We'll use the gym as the example. We think ourselves out of it because we get overwhelmed with how far it is from where we are to where we want to be. And this is an analogy that works for any area of your life, from where you are to where you want to be. I want each of you to think about an area of your life, whether it's your physical health, whether it's your career, whether it's any goals, personal or professional. And think about from where you are to where you want to be. Well, we often think ourselves out of taking that first step because it seems like there's so many steps to go, right? The journey of 1,000 miles. However, when you get in the car with the intention of going to the gym, where do you usually drive? Some of you are like, the donut shop? No, but the right answer is the gym, right? So you usually go to the gym. And when you drive to the gym, what do you usually do? You go in the gym and you exercise, right? So here's the strategy is simply this, that whenever you start to think about something and then you start to make it bigger than it is, and you start to think about the whole 1,000-mile journey as opposed to the first step, just get in the car and go to the gym. Meaning, just do that first thing. Getting the body that you've always wanted and imagined and dreamt of is no more difficult than getting in your car with a gym bag packed in the trunk 4 or 5 days a week. That's it, right? If you take that first step, that's all it takes. When I was a salesperson, I had to make 20 calls a day to be successful at selling. Oh, the thought of 20 calls and all the rejection that would go into it and how long it would take. Most of the time, when I thought of it that way, it would keep me from making the calls. But if I just committed to, I'll make one call, and then I'll see how I feel. And I walked over to the phone and made one call, and then I got excited and I was ready to make the other 19. It became easy. The ABCs of living life's purpose. Loving the life you have while creating life your dreams. This is a very simple ABC three-part formula that I've taken many, many hours through writing my book and brainstorming through my speaking career, and I've really tried to define what are the three most valuable lessons that I learned through the process of going through the accident, overcoming the adversity that I went through, and making it back, on top, if you will. The A is accept life before it happens. I've been talking a lot about acceptance, and how there's so many things that are outside of our control, things that we can't change. And for me, the thing that gave me freedom from my emotional pain when I was in the hospital or in the accident was that I accepted it. I accepted it. And from that moment on, I made a decision that I was going to accept life before it happened. What I mean by that is I made a decision that I would accept all things that came my way that I couldn't control. Because, see, it's not the circumstances or the situations or the challenges or adversity of our life that causes us pain. It's the fact that we're not willing to accept them. It's the resistance that we create for ourselves. And in that way, all emotional pain, frustration, anger, it's all self-imposed. And to the level that we resist reality, it's parallel to the level of pain that we create for ourselves. For example, traffic. Most of you can relate to being in traffic. Anybody love traffic? I actually love traffic. I used to hate traffic. Most of you probably hate or somewhere closer to that, you know, part of the scale. I actually love traffic, and here's why. I used to hate traffic, and you imagine yourself in traffic. You know, usually, you know, you need to be somewhere. Maybe you're running late, and you're frustrated, and you're angry at the car in front of you, right? That's why you get so close to them, and, you know, you want them to go faster. But what happens is you're resisting reality. You're wanting and wishing for things to be true that can't be true. Or you're wanting to change things that you can't change, right? Oh, why didn't I leave earlier? You know, if there's somebody in the car with you, you get to direct your energy over there. Why were you keeping us running late? Right? But you're frustrated, you're angry, and let's say you've got a 30-minute car ride ahead. I mentioned earlier, you can't always control what happens to you. You can only choose your experience of life in every moment. So what I advise that you do is the next time you're in the car and you're in traffic, you acknowledge and accept that I can't change it. The traffic's going to be. I'm going to get there when I get there. The only thing that I can do is choose how the experience of the ride is, right? And that's so true in life. We're going to get there eventually, wherever there is, right? Whether you're looking at day-to-day or in the scheme of our entire life, the only choice we have is how we experience every moment and every day. And I've just found that it makes so much more sense, rather than resist reality and try to make it bend to our will, which is an impossible effort, that we just accept all the things that we can't change and that we choose to be happy for the sake of being happy, because it's a lot more fun to go through life and go through challenges and go through adversity, you know, and go through car accidents with that perspective. And you see the words up there, can't change it. Those three words, that became like my get out of pain free card. In fact, I had a bracelet made, a wristband. It says, can't change it. And I almost don't need to wear it anymore because it's become such a part of the way that I think. But initially, I tried to develop this can't change it philosophy, but I'd still find myself every day frustrated over something or wishing something were different or angry or, right? And I'd go, wow, wait a minute, I can't change it. And those words reminded me that if I can't change it, why don't I just be happy anyway? And so I made the wristband. So now when I'm driving in traffic, you know, every day I look at this thing at least once a day usually, and I'm reminded, oh yeah, Hal, you can't change it. Settle down. No reason to get upset. And when I'm in traffic, I'll be driving, you know, and, oh, come on, go faster. And I'll see the wristband. Oh, that's right. Got it. And I just choose to be grateful. That's why I love traffic, because it's the time when everything slows down and I'm reminded that I can't change. I can't control anything around me right now. I can only control what's in here, what's in here, what's in here. And I turn up the radio, put on my favorite song, feel grateful. And again, that's a metaphor for how to experience life. So the A is to accept life before it happens. And then be grateful for everything. Now, when I say be grateful for everything, I mean everything. See, it's easy to be grateful for, you know, well, friends and family and, you know, and whenever, if you have a, you know, fortune fall upon you, well, it's easy to be grateful for that, right? It's easy to be grateful for the good. I mentioned in life we have two pages, the good and the bad, right? It's easy to be grateful for everything on the good list. Here's my challenge to you. Can you be grateful for everything on the bad list? You know, my accident. Actually, I'll back up one step further. When I got the job selling Cutco, and I started breaking that record, and I started making good money, and I was really on top of the world, would you say that was something to be grateful for? Should I be grateful that I got the job selling Cutco? Was I lucky? Yes, maybe. Yes or no? I don't know. Because if I wasn't selling Cutco, I wouldn't have gotten in a car accident with a drunk driver and had my whole life completely, you know, kind of taken away from me as I knew it. Life as I knew it was taken away. So was the car accident something to be grateful for? Most people would say, no, it's horrible. Well, wait a minute. Because of the car accident, I was able to write a book that became a bestseller and live one of my dreams and share it and inspire many other people. So we got to replace judgment with gratitude. Replace judgment with gratitude. We're so quick to make judgments about what's good and bad and what goes on which list, right? But we can be grateful for everything because our challenges make us stronger. If it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. Well, I'm living proof that even if it kills you for 5 minutes, it still makes you stronger. So be grateful for everything. And then this is the secret sauce, if you will. This is my secret sauce. This is what I believe is the key to creating the life of your dreams or to creating any result that you want, achieving goals. And it's simply this, to commit to process. Now, what does that mean, commit to process? Well, every result that we want in our lives is preceded by a process, whether it is to fall in love or whether it is to buy a house or whether it is to get a job or whether it is to retire at a certain age. Every result that we desire is preceded by a process. The problem is most people are emotionally attached to those results and not committed to the process, which means, well, yeah, I'll try. I'll work toward that result. But as soon as they get burnt out or in any way, in fact, being committed to the process is really a double-edged sword because in any way that you look at it, if things don't go as planned and they experience adversity or challenges or they're not on track for the results they want to create, then they feel discouraged, right? You feel discouraged. And your commitment level to the process is often, it dissipates. But the other side of the sword, what if you're on track and you're doing better than you expected? Everything is going great. Well, the emotion of contentment often sets in. And we feel content. And we're like, oh, I'm doing so good. You know, I'm on a diet. I'm doing so good. I should reward myself with a big piece of cheesecake. I don't know where the logic is in that, right? But either way, when we're emotionally attached to our results, the process is hindered. And I learned this going back to Cutco in sales. I realized that 20 calls a day would average out to achieving my goal for the year. But there were certain days where I would make 20 calls and I would talk to no one. Or everyone I did talk to would tell me no, they didn't want to set an appointment and they would be mean to me. Right? Or I would go on some appointments and so the process on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis, it could really go on the good page or the bad page. The process is kind of an emotion, it's kind of a roller coaster. I realized though, if I just removed the emotion from the process, if I just made a plan which involved the process and I looked long term, if you want to get in great shape, for example, it's if I go to the gym 4 days a week and I do it over 6 months, the result will be what you want. You will get in better shape. But guess what? You might go to the gym for a week and work out and go, look, I did great. And then get on the scale and go, I gained a couple pounds. Oh, I'm discouraged now. And then you back off from the process. And it's continuous where people do that, where we're emotionally attached to our results, which gets us excited enough to start the process, but then the process doesn't go the way we want, we disengage from the process, and we don't get the results. And we do it over and over and over and over. It's this self-sabotaging cycle that most people live their entire life by. So I believe the secret to success, to creating life that you want, it's being committed to the process without being emotionally attached to your results. I ended up making it into the Cutco Hall of Fame at 25. That's me with my family. And now I am very happy to say I am engaged to the woman of my dreams, Ursula Gorski, who's in the back of the room. She deserves a round of applause, everybody. That's the love of my life. So here's my question for you that I want to leave you with. Does everything happen for a reason? Does everything happen for a reason? My own experience, and I can only share with you from my experience, so you've got to go within to find this answer for you. But my experience is that you decide your reasons. Everything happens for a reason, but it's not left up to chance. The reasons aren't predetermined. They're not hidden in some cave somewhere, written on some stone wall, and your job is to spend your life discovering what the reasons for your existence is or what your purpose is. We decide the reasons. I decided that I wanted to inspire and empower other people with my story. And so I wrote a book about it. I traveled the world as a speaker, and I became a coach. And I work with people on a daily and weekly basis. And that's the purpose that I've decided, is to not only love the life that I have while creating the life of my dreams, but to inspire and empower every person that I meet and as many people as I can reach to genuinely, authentically, and unconditionally love the life that you have while you actively, consistently, and passionately create the life of your dreams. It's been an honor to share my story with you today. I really appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you.
Our special thanks to Hal Elrod for his comments here today at the Commonwealth Club of California. Again, my name is Dr. David Oakle, and I will be moderating today's audience question period. Hal, we have some questions, I believe, from some people. Does anybody have some questions? Written down some questions? Thank you. Are you?
Ask you this. When you were had the accident, were you aware that there were people praying for you?
Was I aware that people were praying for me when I had my accident?
Well, when you had the accident or after you were sick, there were people praying for you?
I know there were a lot of people. Are you asking me if there were people praying or if I was aware of it?
If there were people.
Yeah, there were a lot of people praying for me. I know there were prayer chains going across the United States on email and things like that.
Yes. And after you came up from your coma, did you, were you aware that they were praying for you? They did tell you that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That gave you strength?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that for my recovery, a large part of my recovery was thanks to the love and support of people that I didn't even know, but mostly my friends and family. I think I set a record at the Modesto Hospital for more visitors for a patient than they had ever had before. Yeah. And my friend Jeremy was always joking. He goes, you're in a coma and you're setting records. Yeah. But it was the Cutco company. There were so many representatives from all over Northern California that I had met before that came to show their support. So, yeah.
I'm asking you this question because I read an article. I can't remember if it was the Time magazine or somewhere like that, that they are making studies on prayers and people getting better from the prayers. That's why I wanted to ask if that's you were aware of that.
I believe 100% in the power of prayer. Yeah.
I have another question. May I?
Sure.
In Our Father, the prayer that we say, we say, your will be done. And that's what you're saying, the will be done. I mean, accept what you have in life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Do we have any other questions written down or otherwise? Does anybody want to speak through the microphone? Hal?
I'll take spontaneous questions.
Yeah.
Question back? Absolutely.
Repeat this question.
I do speak at schools. Yeah, she asked me if I ever speak at schools or high schools. I do speak at schools. In fact, I have a DVD, and I should probably mention this. I have a couple packages available today. My book's available out there, and that's $20. And then I have a $40 package that's my book. It is a Can't Change It bracelet, which I'm telling you, this is life-changing. And it is actually a DVD that is of me speaking to 1,500 high school students at the Boys and Girls Club. I was their keynote speaker last year. And so it's me speaking to 1,500 high school students, ages 14 to 18, and on a speech called The Dream Equation. So, but yeah, I do. I love to speak to youth, and I really am. That's a big focus of mine. So, yeah.
I have a question. I watched the Academy Awards, and I think Penelope Cruz and Kate Winslet were up there, and they talked about that they were. One of them was talking about that they were holding a shampoo bottle and they were saying their acceptance speech when they were 5 and 6 years old. And I think this was Penelope Cruz was it Kate? I got them two mixed. But they both talked about, when they were little girls, saying that they were going to get it. So Yeah, so what is that? Can you explain that, why that later became
a reality?
Yeah.
I'm a big believer. How many of you have seen The Secret? The Secret is really just, and it took a lot of flack because it's kind of one side of the equation. The Secret talks about that what you focus on, you will manifest or you will create, it will become a reality in your life. And I believe that that's a half truth. What you focus on and then take consistent action toward will become a reality in your life. But it begins with the focus. It begins with focus. That's, you know, it's you focusing on something makes it important to you. The more you focus on something, the more important it becomes to you. And the more motivated you are naturally to want to take action to make it a reality. But people that sit around and just focus on what they want and think about it and, you know, and don't do anything, nothing's going to happen. So there's something I call the miracle equation that I teach in my book. And the miracle equation, it's a formula that really connects both of those sides of unwavering faith and extraordinary effort to create miracles in your life. And I define a miracle in that context as any result that is extraordinary, uncommon, or unexpected that you create in your life. So.
We have another question.
Yes, you mentioned that you have taken the Robbins, Tony Robbins. Mm-hmm. What age have you done that, and are you still doing it, and did it help you come up on the stage and speak kind of confidently and things like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. She asked me, I mentioned that I did Tony Robbins. She asked what age I did Tony Robbins and if I still do it. I did my first Tony Robbins event at age 20. It was about a year after my accident. Actually, it was exactly a year to the date. December 3rd, 1999 was my accident. My first Tony Robbins event was December 3rd, 2000. For me, I value personal development at the highest level. I'm glad you asked this question. This is really important to me. I really believe that our outer world will always be a reflection of our inner world. And that, yes? Why did I take Tony Robbins? A friend of mine introduced me to Tony Robbins tapes, which is actually when I decided I wanted to be a motivational speaker, was when I learned about Tony Robbins. And so, I listened to his tapes. I got a lot of value from his tapes. They improved my mindset. They taught me a lot of strategies that I could put into action. So then I went to his seminar. I've been to Tony Robbins seminars since. In fact, I personally believe that that's the most important thing that you can do is invest time in your personal development every day. I actually have something that I do called the Miracle Morning. In fact, everybody, if you want to write this down, this is a resource. I did a 60-minute call a couple months ago, and the response was phenomenal. And actually, I'm writing a book now that's called The Miracle Morning. And if you go to themiraclemorning.com, you can get that audio. It'll be sent to you. You just put in your name and email, and you'll get an email sent with the audio. And The Miracle Morning, it's really about the idea that I'll use numbers to make it a really easy to understand. Most people want to experience a level 10 life. They want level 10 success in their relationships, financially, physically, right? We want, on a scale of 1 to 10, they want that level 10 life, level 10 success. However, most people, they don't actively, consciously invest time, money, and energy in developing themselves in each of the areas that they want level 10 success in. So if you're a level 2 person in any area, trying to achieve level 10 success in that area, it's going to be a struggle for you. And I realized for me, I chased success for a long time, a lot of years, because I was a level 2 person that wanted to be level 10. And so about a year ago, I had this breakthrough. I realized this. And so I began my Miracle Morning. It started out with 1 hour a day where I would read for 30 minutes every morning, and I would exercise for 30 minutes. And I did that 6 days a week. And I created a routine. It was a habit. And I would start every morning that way from 6 to 7 a.m. It's great. And then, as I was continuing to go to more seminars, from not just Tony, I mean, I go to all different people's seminars. And I learned what this one guy called an hour of power. And Tony refers to an hour of power sometimes. But he taught me this hour of power where he did 15 minutes of journaling, 15 minutes of silence, meditation, or prayer, 15 minutes of reading affirmations, and 15 minutes of visualization. And I thought, I'm already getting up at 6 a.m. I don't have any time to do this. And I thought, what if I got up at 5? It was almost like, No way. You only get up at 5 if you're, you know, going to catch an early flight to go on vacation or something, at least for me. And so I thought, you know, this is so inspiring, I want to try it. So I tried it the next morning, and combining that with my reading and exercise, it was so empowering that I then, after doing that for a month and getting up at 5 every day, I thought, I need to write more. I need to work on my next book. I need to share this morning routine, this miracle morning that I've named it, with other people because it's changing my life. I'm becoming the person that success will come easy to me, right? Donald Trump, for example. If you and Donald Trump were both given an opportunity, a business opportunity, right? It would probably be a lot easier for him, and I'm speaking in generalities, but it would probably be easier for him than it would be for you or me because he's a level 10 in that area. He's developed himself in that area. And what I realize is that we can all become, just through reading and listening to audios, you know, and do it in meditation and all different practices, we can become a level 10 in every area. Maybe not all at once, but, you know, every day I read a little bit on relationships, a little bit on my finances, a little bit on, you know, mindset, on and on and on. And I see myself going from being a level 2 person to a level 3 to, you know, I'm climbing up to where success is becoming easy. And so The Miracle Morning is a new book that I just signed with a publisher. I'm excited. It'll be out probably early next year. But if you go to themiraclemorning.com, you can listen to a 60-minute audio where I reveal the secret to changing your entire life before 8 a.m. That's the tagline. You guys like that? Should I stick with that? I'm like testing that as the book tagline. Okay, cool.
We have time for one more question.
Okay, you're an excellent speaker. What kind of advice do you have for somebody who wants to learn how to speak in front of an audience?
Joining Toastmasters, that would be the first. Toastmasters is a free organization. It's like $50 to $100 a year, depending on which group you join. And you get to give speeches on a regular basis and evaluate other speakers. That's what I would start with. And I've been a speaker now for 9 years. I was a speaker for 7 years, then joined Toastmasters to try to learn some of the fundamentals and stuff that I had never really been taught. I'm still working on getting those down. But, so that's what I would advise. Join Toastmasters.
Let's go ahead and give a hand to Hal Elrod.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Hal Elrod for his comments here today, for his presentation called ABCs, The ABCs of Living Your Life's Purpose with Hal Elrod. We also like to thank our audience here at the club, as well as our radio audience at home. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California commemorating its 105th year of enlightened discussion is now adjourned.